Good morning, Park City. This is Larry Warren, along with John Wells this week, sitting in for Doug Wells, who has been called away. And this is Monday, so it must be Mountain Money, John. Welcome.
Mountain Money. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thanks for sitting in this week. We're headed to a high in the 80s today and under mostly sunny skies. Just looks like the perfect Park City day, and now we're into finally into summer now. We've had the solstice over the weekend, and here we go. So let's talk this hour about one destination for many millions of Americans, the National Park System. And our first guest is longtime local Kurt Repinchak, who is a founder and editor-in-chief of a great website, nationalparkstraveler.com. And Kurt is a longtime reporter, writer, and now is the expert in all things national parks and posts regularly to his website, National Parks Traveler. So we're going to talk about the website, the business model behind it, and about the park system as we know it.
And our next guest, Larry, will be Rick Lindquist, who's the president of Zane Benefits. He joins us in the studio to discuss self-insured medical reimbursement plans. Currently, 56% of all companies in the U.S. offer group insurance to their employees, but this may be changing as self-insurance plans are dropping in price and tax advantages would be available to the employer and the employee. Larry, I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Well, that's news you can use, certainly. So we'll hear from Rick Lindquist, and then we'll speak with Jennifer Jackenthal, director of the PC CAPS program, who's bringing in two students who've been at the Center for Entrepreneurship's summer camps. And you'll recall a couple of weeks ago we had some guests on who talked about the start of these camps. Well, now this is the follow-up. We'll see what sorts of great ideas came out of those camps, and we'll talk with a couple of the students involved. So you're listening to Mountain Money, and we will be back to talk about the national parks in just a moment.
Park City Realty Group is a proud sponsor of KPCW's Mountain Money. This is Mike Mazzoni, principal broker and owner of Park City Realty Group. 100% locally owned and operated, Park City Realty Group provides boutique real estate services to buyers and sellers in the area. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our guest, Kurt Repinchak, founder and editor-in-chief of National Parks Traveler website. Welcome, Kurt.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good to be here.
Well, I've known you for many, many years. Our paths have crossed innumerable times because as a reporter, you and I shared similar interests, which was the public lands of the United States, especially in the West. And we'd bump into each other in Yellowstone and far-flung places around the West. And you've supported yourself as a news reporter for many years. What made you turn to the web in August of 2005 when you launched?
You know, Larry, it was at the time I was a freelancer. I was writing for publications such as Sunset and Audubon and Smithsonian. And it was just a vehicle for me to broaden my platform, so to speak, or to explain my platform to editors out there looking for assignments, that I was covering the national parks and wildlife issues and environmental issues, public lands issues. So the initial idea was, let's just, you know, get this launched out there. And as I searched for stories to put on the Traveler, it would give me ideas to pitch to magazines.
And so it was a sales tool to sell your services to others. But now it's evolved into its own being.
It really has. The first week, I think I had 400 readers total the first 7 days. Now that's maybe a good hour. We're up over 1 million readers a year. Over 150,000 readers a month. And so, in essence, it's kind of a good medium-sized city media outlet.
That is not bad. So is this now a full-time business for you?
I'm working on it as that. Yes, I am. And When you think that there's 280 million visitors to the national parks a year, there's an audience out there for this type of material. And that's basically what I found that's made me want to turn this into a business is there's a hunger out there for news about the national parks, whether it's, you know, how to visit Yellowstone or what to go see in Arches National Park to what's the latest search and rescue? What are the congressional issues with the Park Service? You know, even what is Park Service management doing?
And I was surprised last night when I was getting ready for these conversations. I thought before I went to your website, well, this is going to tell me the name of the park and a couple of things to do and those sorts of things. But it's a lot more comprehensive than that. You have book reviews, these fireside reads that you can go out and purchase these books that talk about different hikes and all sorts of different things with all the national parks. You have FAQs. You have news of each park. You have trails that people have hiked and offered commentaries on. And you also have some issues that make you sit down and think. Like, for an example, there's an article, "Are National Parks a drive-up, boring-type situation because they're more restrictive?" And you present both sides. And I just thought that was fascinating. Did you want to talk about that at all?
You know, it's an issue dear to my heart, and maybe it shows my age getting on, but I do believe that, you know, when the parks were created, they weren't designed to be an outdoor gymnasium, so to speak, and that's what some of the users out there want to turn them into. And, you know, when you think about it, there's 84 million acres of National Park Service lands. I think there's 191 million acres of Forest Service lands, and there's over 200 million acres of BLM lands. And the BLM lands and the Forest Service lands have that multiple use prescription. And so there's a lot more opportunities and understandably allowable activities on those lands versus the national parks, which really are special places. And, you know, a generation down the road or two generations down the road, what do we want them to look like? Do we want them to be cross-hatched with mountain bike trails? Do you want to go to the Hayden Valley in Yellowstone and see a bunch of kayakers and canoeists going down the Firehole River, the Yellowstone River? It's a choice that we have to make. I think there's some flexibility to find a compromise, but to say that the drive-through museums, I think, is a little bit of hyperbole.
Well, and Outside Magazine, I think, is the instigator of an article to that extent. And when you wrote about it, your comment chart. Your comments went off the charts at the audacity of Outside or any magazine saying the parks have gotten boring, because they certainly aren't. But what they are getting, and I noticed this Memorial weekend, and maybe I shouldn't have gone Memorial Day weekend, but went down to Canyonlands Island in the Sky. We couldn't get in. They were only letting one car in for every one that came out. And I thought, in Canyonlands, my gosh, has it come to this? I mean, are there do we have to worry that parks are just so overrun that they aren't fun to go to?
You know, it's an interesting point, Larry, because there are a lot of people out there who worry that there's a visitation problem with the national parks. And certainly in the high season, it doesn't appear as if there's a visitation problem. And I certainly wouldn't go to Canyonlands on Memorial Day weekend, but there are a lot of...
I should have checked your website first.
There are a lot of wonderful destinations year-round, and even some of the places you wouldn't think about going in the winter can be fascinating places. I mean, like Canyonlands or Arches or Bryce Canyon.
And one thing is there are so many windshield tourists who just go from viewpoint to viewpoint, and even in the dead of summer in Yellowstone, you can walk 15 minutes down a trail, and you're virtually the only one.
Yeah, exactly.
And back to that article, I think you provided a balanced response where the park systems are protecting the lands, and at the same time, you gave some information at Glacier, for an example. If you wanted to get lost for 2 weeks, you could do that, and you told how you could do that, and, you know, those sorts of things. So, it's interesting. It's not just a website that says here's a good hike and here's a telephone number, but you offer all this editorial and controversial subjects.
But. Yeah, thanks. And going back to that article, I mean, you know, how can somebody say a national park is boring? Obviously, they've never climbed to the top of the Grand Teton. They've never floated the Colorado River. They've never skied to the North Rim of the Grand Canyon in wintertime. I mean, there are so many adrenaline-pushing activities that you can do in the parks without a mountain bike, without an ORV, without an ATV. I just don't see how they're boring.
Yeah, you know, ORVs you bring up, and we seem to be overrun with them, and they're appropriate in certain places but not others. There was the ORV protest in Recapture Canyon in San Juan County a couple of weeks ago. Are ORV users trying to get into the national parks?
Well, they're in the national parks in some places already. For example, Cape Hatteras National Seashore, it is our very first national seashore. I think it was back in the 1930s that it was designated to be a national seashore. And down through the decades, the management plan kind of got skewed. And you've seen more and more ORVs, which are largely fishermen who don't want to go out surf fishing. And, of course, some of the best spots are on the capes and whatnot. And, you know, if you've got a couple coolers of food and whatnot and bait and you got all your tackle gear and whatnot, you know, they don't want to carry that a mile and a half to their favorite fishing spot. And maybe to some extent they've got a point. At the same time, the enabling legislation at Cape Hatteras Seashore called for a wilderness setting for most of the seashore, and that's not what it is today. In fact, they've never designated official wilderness in Cape Hatteras.
Okay. Another burning controversy in the Park Service is the fact that although only Congress can create a national park, a president, by a signature, can declare a national monument, which for all intents and purposes is the exact same thing, like Bill Clinton did with the Grand Staircase in southern Utah, as Obama may do in the future. Is that a good way to create set-asides for the future, or does it just circumvent the process and offend the locals? In southern Utah, certainly, there was nothing more hated than Bill Clinton's Grand Staircase Monument.
But in the long run, I think studies have shown that it's actually helped the local economy. As far as presidential authority, I think in places it has to be used, especially these days with how Congress is so polarized, where you can have one congressman tie up issues just because it's against his philosophy. The one of the latest monuments down in New Mexico, the locals were overwhelmingly for it, and Congressman Bishop just didn't want to give him a hearing on it. So should the president step in and give the locals what they want, or should one congressman be able to tie things up? It's an interesting question.
Indeed. And Rob Bishop, our representative here in Park City in the U.S. Congress, is pretty much in the driver's seat of national parks in America and park policy, public lands policy. And certainly he doesn't seem to take the side of those who want to see the Park Service expanded.
Not unless it's one of his pet projects or one of his colleagues' pet projects.
Okay. But generally, the attitude in Congress among conservative Republicans like him is that we've already got enough federal land out there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and then there's another side to it, too. And the one that concerns me is a lot of Congress folk like to have a national park unit in their district. And so you see legislation being pushed through to create this or expand that or change the name of this park. And yet you don't always see the appropriation trailers. And so the National Park Service ends up with another unit with no extra dollars to pay for it. And so they have to, steal from other units. And that was the case with First State National Monument in Delaware. There was one man in charge, the superintendent. He had no budget. He had no staff. He had to do everything himself. And they begged, borrowed. They took money from other units in the Northeast region to get him through a year.
And we are speaking with Kurt Repinchek, who 9 years ago put together nationalparktraveler.com. Check out that website. Larry, you were recently at Harpers Ferry, Virginia. Did you know that there are 11 trading cards that you can get just in Harpers Ferry and throughout the entire network of national parks? There are trading cards. I mean, you don't have to just be into baseball.
No, I had no idea. I'll tell you, I did start – there is a National Parks Passport program. You get something that looks like a passport, and then you, every park you go to, you stamp that park stamp on it. And I was filling that book up, and I lost it. So I have to go revisit all these parks now, yeah. I guess.
In get my, it start over.
I've been from Gates of the Arctic – above the Arctic Circle in Alaska to the Everglades. So I haven't made it to the Dry Tortugas. That's probably the last national park unit. But I think I've...
You made it to American Samoa? National Park of American Samoa?
No. There is one way out there in the South Pacific. But, yeah, I should get that on my list. And when I get that stamp, I'd better make sure I keep that passport because I don't think I'd make it back there twice.
Yeah. Was that your first trip to Harpers Ferry?
Now, I've been to Harpers several times. I just think it's a fascinating village and so much history there, Civil War history, where John Brown tried to overthrow capture the arms factory that was there and was killed, martyred, his supporters would say. And I actually, Kurt and John, worked for the National Parks Subcommittee. I took a year's sabbatical in Washington and wrote some legislation that actually made it into law. So,
wow.
So if you go to Hyde Street Pier in San Francisco, you now have to pay admission to go see the old ships there.
Is that your fault?
They used to be free.
Thanks to Larry.
used to be free, but because they were free and the Park Service unit did not get any money to restore them, they were actually sinking right as they were tied up to the dock. So I wrote a law that became law saying we'll now charge admission. So I took my kids there, and I was very proud to say, see that booth there? That's there because of Dad. And they said, oh, you mean it used to be free? Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
But when you go out there now, the ships are all fixed up. So yeah. it all worked out. But let's continue talking about the national parks. Funding has always been an issue. These there are inadequate sewer systems. There are inadequate lodges, inadequate roads. I mean, this system has been chronically under-supported, hasn't it, by the government that created them?
It really has. I think the last figure I saw that the budget for the National Park Service, National Park System, is 1/13 of the federal budget. Mm. And when you look at, you know, these are supposed to be incredible scenic landmarks, historical landmarks, cultural landmarks that tell the story of our country, and we're just not funding them to pay for their upkeep.
Hey, you meant 1/13 of 1%?
Right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, not 1/13 of the budget. 1/13 of 1%. Yeah, it's shocking how little money goes into the parks. And you travel them widely. What do you think of the people who run them? Who are the rangers? Who are the road repairmen? I mean, these are really dedicated public servants. Everybody likes to not everybody, but many like to bash the bureaucracy. But boy, to be in the Park Service, it's very competitive to even get in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then these guys put up with pretty terrible living conditions in some cases and not especially great salaries.
Yeah. No, the rank and file really go above and beyond in some aspects. You know, the joke is that their pay comes in sunsets, and it's not too far removed from that. There was a study out there, and I forget the website, but a National Park Service employee makes roughly $11,000 less than their peer for the Forest Service or the BLM or
wow.
another federal agency. And you have to wonder, you know, how long can they make do with that? I mean, it's draining on the morale. I mean, the best places to work in federal government surveys that come out every year, the Park Service is down near the bottom, and it's really, really sad for what we look up to for the Park Service and the park system.
So they originally go into it because they have a passion, and after a period of time, they just get beaten up because they have trouble making it?
Some do. Some do. Or, you know, you march up the ladder. I mean, it's interesting studies. I mean, obviously, the SEO, the senior executive service, you know, all those employees are really happy and don't have a problem. I was out in Virginia in late May, and I spent a day with a ranger on the Captain John Smith National Historic Chesapeake Water Trail. And she was delightful to spend the day with and, you know, confided that, you know, yeah, the morale is really down. And it's unfortunate. It shouldn't be like that.
Okay, so this sounds like the dream job you've invented for yourself. So are you constantly traveling to national parks far and wide, or is it mostly Western-centered? And with all the traveling you've done to national parks, do you have some unsung gems we ought to go visit sometime?
Where do we start? How much time? You know, Larry, my background, I cut my journalistic teeth on the Associated Press. And so, you know, as you well know, AP reporters can really chunk it out. And so I don't travel as much as I like. Somebody recently asked me, you know, how much of a year do you travel? And I really didn't sit down to analyze it. And it's probably, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, maybe 10 weeks a year.
Although we should say Kurt wanted to know how soon – when this interview ended, because he was off to Yellowstone.
That's
today.
Right. That's right. And so, you know, probably, you know, 2/3 of my time, I'm on the phone, working the phone, you know, doing press releases and whatnot. And I do try and get out of the Rocky Mountain zone. I mean, as I said, I was back east a month ago in New Jersey. I went to Pennsylvania and Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area. I went to Morristown, General Washington's headquarters, and this Revolutionary War, went down to this new Captain John Smith Trail. Later this summer, I'm going to be going over to Lawson Volcanic National Park and then up to Crater Lake National Park to visit those and branch out. And I've got a pretty good core of volunteers, some who are retired Park Service personnel who contribute their efforts to really broaden and deepen the traveler.
So the other half of that question was, what are some of the gems out there that nobody's heard about? Let's think of ones that are in this neighborhood, the West in general.
Well, have you ever been into the Beckler region of Yellowstone, Cascade Corner?
No, but it's on my list.
The southwest corner of the park is just fabulous, and you go down there in September, it's got all these waterfalls. You'll never see so many waterfalls in Yellowstone until you get down there, and hardly anybody goes there.
The southwest corner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cascade Corner.
I would also mention locally that you have your book review and you go through, you know, these different books that might pertain to specific parks outside of Utah. But you have one particular book that you review, 50 Best Short Hikes in Utah's National Parks. So if you are not going to be traveling outside of Utah this year, you may want to take a look at that book review and you may want to pick up the book.
Yeah, it's a good book for people who are trying to knock off as many parks in one trip as they can, and they don't have the time for a Beckler
excursion.
These are nice short hikes that you can, you know, do a couple in a day and really tap into some of the essence of why it's a national park.
And, you know, you don't have to range far from Park City. Timpanogos Cave is less than an hour's drive from here, mm-hmm. and that's a seasonal park unit. Great Basin National Park is right on the Nevada-Utah border, and that has Lehman Caves in it, as well as how old are the bristlecone pines there?
Are they 1,300, 1,400 years?
Yeah, they're just ancient trees and the remnants of glaciers in Nevada, if you can believe that. Snowfields there. And
you know,
Wheeler Peak, and what else?
Another great park, and this kind of ties into the ongoing debate over, is it a national park, is it a national monument? What is it? Is Dinosaur National Monument. That is one fabulous place. I don't know if you've spent much time there, Larry. It's got two world-class rivers for floaters.
I've floated both of those rivers, the Yampa, and at the confluence it joins the Green, and that's fabulous. And an indoor dinosaur quarry, which is pretty unique.
Yep. And then you've got some of the rock art if you get out into the landscape. And just the landscape itself. I mean, it is one fabulous place that if you wanted to debate whether it should be a national park or a national monument, I think hands down it should be a national park.
Indeed. And Utah. Now, I've always bragged this up, and I don't know if it's accurate anymore. Utah, outside of California, Utah at one time had more units of the national park system than any other state.
Yeah, I think that's. I know California is number one, and I don't know if Alaska might be ahead of Utah.
Probably now, since so many have been declared up there. But in any event, it's summer, second or third day of summer. Get out and enjoy the national parks. And thanks very much, Kurt Repinchak, for your website, nationalparkstraveler.com, and for joining us this morning.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Larry and John. It's been fun. Maybe we can do it again down the road.
Okay. Have a great trip to Yellowstone. Watch out for the grizz. And we will be back in just a minute to talk with Rick Lindquist, president of Zane Benefits, discussing self-insured medical reimbursement plans. But first, this is Mountain Money on KPCW, headed to a high of maybe 80 today under sunny skies. We'll be back in just a minute.
Additional support for KPCW is provided by our Broadcasters Club, a group of community members who are investors in and ambassadors for KPCW. Thank you to our founding silver members, including Donna Van Buren and Fred Woods, Doug and Benita Vanderkoy, Larry Warren and Carol Murphy, Jan Wilking and Terry Thomas, and Charlie and Mary Winsor. For information on how you can join the Broadcasters Club, please check out our website at kpcw.org and click on the silver microphone.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo has been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
Okay, our next guest, Rick Lindquist, is the president of Zane Benefits. He joins us here in the studio to discuss self-insured medical reimbursement plans. Zane Benefits was founded in 2006. Rick joined in 2007, was named president in 2011. Zane Benefits is here, headquartered in Park City on Heber Avenue. And according to, so welcome to Mountain Money.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. According to your website, 56% of all companies in the United States offer group insurance to their employees, and up to 60% of small companies will eliminate employer-sponsored plans in favor of individual health plans with a defined contribution. You also claim that 90% of employees can get individual insurance for half the price of group. How does that work?
So if you're familiar with the individual market, you probably have a negative connotation. There's two ways to get health insurance in the U.S. Via the private market, and one is through your employer. Today, 150 million Americans get their health insurance through their employer, and only 20 to 30 million get their health insurance on the individual market. And the nice thing is, because of Obamacare, the individual market now costs 20 to 60% less than the employer market.
You know, I have been surprised that, and maybe I shouldn't be, that under Affordable Health Care Act, I think I read in the Wall Street Journal last week, 10 states have now received their filings from insurance companies on rates for next year, and they're all going up a lot. Not a little, not falling. They're going up astronomically, 10, 20, 30% increases. What happened to the affordable part of the Affordable Care Act?
Oh, that's funny. Well, in some states, actually, the rates went down. So the average rates across all plans was about 8%. Rate increase, which is a typical rate increase in the health insurance market traditionally. However, when you compare, remember we're comparing individual health insurance with group health insurance, still it costs less because group health insurance is queued up for even a greater increase. A lot of small businesses renewed early in 2013 to avoid a lot of the mandates for Obamacare. So a lot of the plans, their brokers came to them and said, hey, if you renew on December 1st instead of January 1st, you're going to push back these rate increases. So a lot of small businesses did that, and a lot of small businesses are going to be receiving an unwelcome surprise.
So it's almost like a two-year increase.
You got it. A lot of small businesses are going to see 50% rate increases this year, and they're going to have no choice but to cancel health insurance coverage for their employees.
So how do you go into the individual marketplace and save money? That's the big question then.
So there's the first thing is you just got to figure out the plan. So we at Zane Benefits, we believe the group health insurance system is broken regardless of the cost. And the primary reason is when you think about health insurance, do you think about an employer or business-to-business product? A lot of Americans do, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. Health insurance is probably the greatest or most important financial consumer product that you can buy today. Most people live well past their retirement age and are continuing to work. One of the primary reasons is they want to have health insurance, and they think that they can only get health insurance through their job. The individual market allows three main benefits. So first, as a consumer, you get to choose your plan. So any health plan, any doctor network, any deductible, if you want an HSA, you can pick that too. Second, you get to keep your health insurance when you switch jobs. So no more being shackled by your employer when you want to retire.
Oh, and that's the only reason anybody works here.
It's your health benefits? Absolutely.
I don't think so.
And then, of course, the cost. So the way you get individual health insurance is every state has a health insurance marketplace now as part of the Affordable Care Act. And, for example, Utah's is run by the federal government. And you go to healthcare.gov, and you can search online all the plans through four metallic tiers, bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Higher the metal tier, the higher the coverage you're going to get. Also, the higher the premium. First, you go out, buy your plan. And then what Zane Benefits does is we actually help the employer continue to offer health benefits. You mentioned that you work here because of the health benefits. Well, that may not be true here, but in a lot of companies, that's the main reason someone takes a job. It's a huge recruiting and retention tool for businesses. So our pitch to a small business is get out of the health insurance business, but don't get out of the health benefit business. Our software lets them reimburse the employee for their individually purchased health insurance.
And the company would be able to deduct that on their taxes.
Exactly. So full business deduction for the company. It's actually excluded from payroll taxes as well. So they don't have to pay the 7.65% in FICA and FUTA, as well as the employee gets the money tax-free.
The employee gets the money tax-free, and the employee gets a more competitive product.
You got it. They've got a better product for them because they can keep it with them when they lose their job. The number one reason for personal bankruptcies in the U.S. is actually medical bankruptcies. And the primary reason for that is they lose their health insurance when they get too sick to come to work.
Okay. So is it true that 90% of employees, by going with this sort of arrangement, can save one half on their plans?
I'm not sure if that's a direct quote. It's on average 20 to 60%, and it depends on the individual circumstances. Mm-hmm. A younger employee, for example, is going to have a much lower premium than maybe an older employee. The real kicker, though, are these things called premium tax credits, and this is a brand new thing as part of Obamacare. And what happens is, based on your income, you get a tax credit from the federal government that subsidizes your individual health insurance premium. So that's where a lot of this savings comes in.
Okay.
So a family of four, for example, who makes less than $95,000 a year has their health insurance capped as a percent of their income. So I read a stat this week. HHS just put out a report. 70% of the people going through the exchange are paying less than $100 for their health insurance premium after the subsidies are applied.
Hmm. Excellent. What about the rest? Are they paying more?
When you compare it to group health insurance, they're not paying more. So if you compare individual health insurance costs today compared with what they were before the Affordable Care Act, they are more expensive on average, but that's primarily because of a new provision called guaranteed issue. In other words, carriers can no longer deny you coverage based on a pre-existing condition.
How can individuals get information on the tax credit to see if they qualify or not?
We actually have a tax credit calculator that you can see at ZaneBenefits.com. So go to ZaneBenefits.com and click on the tax credit calculator link, and you can type in your income, household size, because it's based on household size and income,
right,
and estimate your tax credit.
Okay.
Now Zane Benefits, founded by a longtime local, Paul Zane, mm-hmm, Pilzer, great entrepreneur around town and around the country. If you're not selling insurance, how are you making a living?
So we've made a strategic decision not to sell health insurance, and that keeps us from being biased when we're talking to a business or a customer of ours, which is a good place to be to make a customer happy. So what we do is we provide a software platform that makes it really easy for the employer to continue to offer health benefits without a group health plan. Specifically, what an employer does is they define a monthly contribution via the self-insured medical reimbursement plan, and the employee uses that money to go buy their own individual health insurance. So it actually happens on a reimbursement basis, sort of like an expense account. And our software makes sure that happens very quickly, so less than 5 minutes a month, and then also in compliance with the federal rules that govern these plans.
So the software offers a basket of options?
So yes, we integrate. So there's the software that manages the reimbursement piece, making it easy for the employee to request reimbursement. So let's just say you went out and bought your own individual plan. We would provide you with the health employer would select what we call a health insurance concierge provider, who would be one of our 2,000 insurance broker partners. For example, ehealthinsurance.com is one of our partners. So you would click on that link and go to ehealthinsurance.com and shop just about every plan available in the state where you reside. Once you bought that plan, you'd pay for it with your own money. You'd keep a receipt, though, just like you would get for taking a colleague or partner out to dinner and submitting a sales receipt. So you'd bring that receipt. You'd log into your portal with Zane Benefits, and 1 minute later, you would have submitted a reimbursement request. That's going to come to Zane Benefits. We're going to review, make sure that you've paid your bill, that the it's a real premium. You're not trying to defraud the system, and we'll approve that, usually within less than an hour.
eHealth is Gary Lauer's company?
Gary Lauer, yes, he might be the CEO of eHealth. I can't remember who the CEO is currently, but
yeah,
it sounds right.
Right. Well, he founded it, and he's the CEO. And you do not receive compensation from eHealth?
We do, actually. So we receive a marketing fee, and we do have relationships with brokers who do revenue share with us and as part of a partnership. However, the employer, if they are uncomfortable with that arrangement or whatnot, they can actually designate a local broker who has no relationship with Zane and plug that broker into the health insurance concierge system.
So if you provide a vehicle that points to different options and some of those options allow you to get compensated, then in that particular scenario, you're selling insurance. I mean, there's really no difference between an independent insurance agent and that type of that piece of the model.
Well, we don't provide any advice on the plans. So we're not endorsing any specific health insurance company. We are simply saying, hey, here's an option. And the key thing about our system is that, and this is different than most other group health insurance options or other competitive options, is we don't require the employee to buy through our system. So the employee can say, listen, I want to go buy through my friend who's a broker, or I want to go directly to a health insurance company like Select Health in Utah and call up their call center. So it really gives the employee full control and choice over where they want to buy health insurance, non-restrictive.
You know, and one thing you mentioned just quickly in passing, HSA, and I don't think enough people know about HSAs, and they're a great tax-saving tool when you're getting to April 15th. Talk a little bit about what's an HSA, who qualifies, what are its benefits?
Perfect. So when you buy individual health insurance, one of the things you may want to do is open up a health savings account, and it's essentially an individual retirement account for healthcare. A lot of people call it an IRA on steroids, and basically it allows you to put money into an account tax-free, and it accrues tax-free, and then you also get to take it out tax-free if you spend it on medical care.
Right.
So it's triple tax advantages. So if you're using a lot of medical care, if you want to save for retirement, it's a terrific option. I've had an HSA for 7 years.
Right. You need to sign up for more risk on the deductible.
Correct. One of the requirements is you've got to buy what's called an HSA qualified plan, which has a minimum deductible threshold that you have to meet.
$5,000.
It's about $1,250, I think, this year, or $1,300.
So, okay. So you're paying full fare when you go to your doctor, at least the first few times. It starts paying after you've burn through $1,250 of your own money.
So the idea is by raising your deductible and saving the premium. A lot of times you can cut the premium in half by increasing your deductible from zero to, let's just say, $1,300. Then you take the savings from the premium and invest it in an HSA. So yeah. Maybe your premium went from $400 to $200. You'd put $200 a month into your HSA. And if you did have an event, you would use the HSA money.
And when you think about it, the insurance in general is really moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. So 20 years ago, if you had a pipe that broke in your house and water went everywhere, you had your deductible. You paid – it was a small deductible. You paid it, and the insurance company took care of the pipe, the water damage. And today, everything's moving towards a much higher deductible. Much higher deductible that's just providing catastrophic coverage in case your house gets knocked down or something really catastrophic happens. And it's the same thing on the insurance side. It protects you from, you know, something expensive.
Exactly, exactly. A lot of people think of health insurance the wrong way. Instead of catastrophic insurance, they think of it as prepaid medical expenses.
Right.
And that's really what it's become. It's become pre-negotiated rates via these doctor networks and provider networks that you pay a substantial amount of your premium towards.
So automobile, home insurance, medical insurance, the same way the industry is moving that way.
You got it.
Okay, thanks, Rick Lindquist, president of Zane Benefits, discussing self-insured medical reimbursement plans and all things Affordable Care Act. And when we come back, we'll have a little fun. We'll have some students in who are winners from the Entrepreneur Summer Camp going on this summer in Park City. We'll be back with that after this.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
American Roots on KPCW is proudly supported by Donna Van Buren of Greater Park City Properties, managing HOAs in Park City, Canyons, and Deer Valley for 30 years. Greater Park City Properties can be reached at hoa@greaterparkcityproperties.com.
Yes. Okay. Welcome back to Mountain Money. We're going to wrap up the show today talking with some students who've been learning and exercising their brains already this summer as part of the Center for Entrepreneurship's I guess you'd call them summer camps for young entrepreneurs. We have Jennifer Jackenthal, director of PC Caps, in here with PJ Dowling, who has been attending, and Skylar Jackenthal, maybe some kind of relation of yours, Jennifer.
And, possibly.
And Jennifer, why don't you start and tell us what the kids have been up to so far this summer at this camp?
Well, the Innovators in Action Camp, while not directly related with PC Caps, is perfect match. The kids have really learned a lot about what is entrepreneurship, what is an entrepreneurial headset, what's the creative process, and then they went out and developed projects that were related to what kids their age needs that they have. And these guys can tell you a little bit about their projects.
Okay, well, let's start with PJ Dowling. You were in the Senior Institute. What sorts of things were you up to there? Who all came in to talk to you, and what kind of results did you achieve?
Well, two people came in that ran it, Blake and Lindsay, I think, and we learned about how to be an entrepreneur and what it means and how to have the right mindset.
And did you find you had some of those skills?
Yeah. Through the program, we had to come up with a problem and then find a solution to that problem. And we got to present it to some people, and that's why we're here.
So before those folks came in to talk to you, you probably had some expectations of what an entrepreneur was and the types of things that they do. Were there any surprises after you spoke with them? As you learned about it?
Yeah. Being an entrepreneur, I thought it was just about selling a product, like finding a problem and then seeing a solution. But I didn't realize that there were more things involved, like finding a group of people that you want to sell to, like teenagers or kids, and figuring out how you're going to do it and what you're going to do it with and all the resources that you need.
Yeah. So did you come up with a service or product, and what was it?
Yeah, my friends Cole Stanton, Matt Whipple, and I came up with a product called the Morris. It's a small and very sticky sticker with a GPS chip inside of it, and you can stick it onto any personal items like your phone or keys or wallet. And then if you ever lose those things, you can go onto an app or website and through the GPS find it.
Wow. Is that a real product that works?
We haven't been able to test it. We've only been able to think it through and create little prototypes, but we haven't been able to create any yet.
Sure. But as an idea, that's a killer idea.
Yeah. Yeah. We just thought a lot of people lose things. Like, I always lose my phone. And when we were brainstorming, my friend always loses his wallet, and we thought this would be a great way to save time. Because I lose my phone, and it takes me 5 minutes to look for it.
Well, exactly. Save time, and if you don't find it, save tons of money as well.
Yeah,
I could see that working if the technology is there to make it happen.
You could have some fun with that, too. You could, like, slap it on the back of your girlfriend, right, PJ? And, you know, and she wouldn't even know it.
It does have some.
did you have a good time at the Java Cow this morning? How'd you know? Well, I know these things. Skylar, what's going on? What did you work on?
Well, our project that we came up with, there was two other girls in my group, and we were supposed to make a product that would help with our age group, and it was supposed to be, I think, 10 to 14, and we came up with a peer pressure app to, like, when you're in a situation where you're under peer pressure, you can open up the app, and it looks just like the message app, so, like, it's kind of like a disguise, so no one knows that you're really opening the app, and once you get there, you, like, can type in, like, say you're being pressured to see a scary movie or something. You could type in scary movie, and it will open. It'll look just like a normal conversation that you'll have in the message app. And you can change the contact from, like, mom to dad or whatever. And then it will say, like, it'll show you asking, can I see this movie? And it'll show them saying, like, it'll have a response that says, like, no, the dog ran away. Your mom wants you to cook dinner with her or something like that. So, like, then you can show them proof, like, no, I really can't go. I'm not making this up, even though you are making it up.
And, Mom, what do you think of that?
I think it's great. It was interesting that one of the parents in the crowd, because the parents voted for these kids, all the parents of all the students that participated voted on what was the best invention. And one of the mothers said, well, so basically you're encouraging kids to lie. And what was your response to that, Skylar?
I said, yeah, they are lying, but it's like the last resort. If your kid says no and they're still, like, pressuring your kid to do it, you could use the app. Because I said, like, would you rather have your kid be pressured into doing drugs, or would you rather have your kid lie? And it's kind of like a no-brainer that you don't want them to do drugs. You want them to lie if they have to.
Indeed. Well, Jennifer, what were some of the other ideas that were kicked around at the entrepreneur camp? Were they mostly technology-based? Because kids are technology-based these days.
You know, they were. PJ, do you remember some of the ideas that came from your age group?
One of them was the steel sock. It was this sock that helps you, that when you stub your toe, it won't hurt. There was another one where there's Velcro on your wrist, and so you can, like, tape your phone or workbook on it, so that way if you're working on something, you don't have to look back and forth. What else? I can't think of
it. Okay.
That's good.
Any others you can think of?
Well, a group of the boys thought of a new grading system.
Like, so you have I'm sure they did.
Yeah. So you have to go through levels. So like you're learning the right thing, and everyone's in like has a different level of grading. And they had like A through F, different groups. And I guess if you, I thought it was pretty interesting that they said, if in the beginning of the year you take the test and you get 100%, you don't even have to go to school that year. Which I thought I would be studying all summer for that test, so I wouldn't have to go. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, in business, there's a lot of different functional organizations that say manufacturing and marketing and sales and human resources and all these different pieces. And an entrepreneur, in the beginning anyway, needs to wear all the different hats. And some people aren't cut out for that. Do you think that being an entrepreneur is something that that would interest you?
I do, yeah. I like inventing and, like, starting businesses and stuff and, like, being with other people.
And wearing all those different hats, including going out and raising money. And
yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, that's a good thing to find out. How about you, PJ?
Yeah, I'd also really like to be an entrepreneur. My dad's one, and what he does, I think, is really cool, and I'd like to do something like that. And I also like inventing and creating stuff.
Right.
Very good. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about this week-long camp, and there's another one coming up, isn't there?
Right. So the Blake and Lindsay, CFESummer.org, are having two more camps, one the week of July 28th and one the week of August 4th, and those are from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., so it's a little bit longer this time around, and the reason they're a little bit longer is because rather than looking for solutions to problems that these students have in their age groups, they are going to be looking for solutions for the community problems, which means they need to get out and interview community members because that's a different audience. They were using themselves as the audience for the product before. And the idea is that first-timers can come to this camp, and as well as students that were involved in the first camp. And like I said, that website address is cfesummer.org.
Right.
And it's the week of July 28th and August 4th from 9 to 2. And it's two separate one-week camps. And I believe this time around it's for kids getting into 7th through 9th grade.
And it's $200 per student, and need-based scholarships are available.
Yes, correct.
And
it'll be held at PC Caps again, which is a really great facility for this because we have, you know, all the walls are dry erase and there's plenty of room to move around. So,
and there's space available still?
Yes, there is. They just announced the camp last week, so I imagine there's still space available.
Okay.
It was really great to see these kids. They're so engaged in their learning, and I think the parents were really proud to see what happened, but more importantly was what they were going through each day.
Very fine. Well, Jennifer Jackenthal, thanks for joining us, Director of PC Caps, PJ Dowling from the Senior Institute, and Skylar Jackenthal from the Junior Institute of the Center for Entrepreneurship Camps. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
This is Ryan Hoffman, Branch Manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, Commercial Lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
I want to thank our great sponsors who make this show possible for us every week. The Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, the Iron Mountain Group, the Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. And thanks for joining me, J.W.
Oh,
always a pleasure to have you.
I very much enjoyed it. And we, of course, want to thank our guests again, Kurt Rabinchek, Rick Lindquist, Jennifer and Skylar Jackenthal, and P.J. Dowling.
And it's CFESummer.org if you want to get your kids involved in the entrepreneurship summer camps. And Kurt's site is nationalparkstraveler.com. Well, thanks very much for joining us. Next week, three more interesting topics, and we'll tell you about them as the week goes on. This is KPCW Park City.